Welcome to episode 614 of the I Hate Critics Movie Review Podcast with your co-host, professional film critic Sean Patrick and Jeff Lasseter. Visit us at ihatecritics.net. We're on Facebook at I Hate Critics, Twitter and Instagram, Critics Pod, patreon.com/criticspod to help support the podcast. We're also on YouTube with the Critics Pod YouTube channel. Subscribe there. Hit the bell to be notified of any new episodes coming out. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Alexa, all the podcatchers. Please go to Apple Podcasts though and subscribe to the show, rate and review the show. Even if you don't have Apple products, it does help with the algorithm. We'll read your reviews on the air. Check out Sean at the Movies. blogspot.com as well as jefflasseter.com. And I am your executive producer, Bob Zarrell. Let's turn it over to Sean and Jeff.
Welcome to the I Hate Critics Movie Review Podcast. I am professional film critic Sean Patrick. With me is Jeff.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Jeff, where do they find you?
JeffLasseter.com. And if you're in the Chicago area, I will be at Days of the Dead in Rosemont this weekend.
Nice.
You can find me there. I've got new Nightbreed, Hellraiser, and my Gay Terrifier print.
Your Nightbreed piece is absolutely incredible.
Thanks. I like it more now that it's printed. I just got the prints back. And while I was working on it, I was like, it's too vivid. And then I got the prints back and I'm like, it's just right.
You are your harshest critic.
I always constantly. Well, that and my ex, but. But that has something that's altogether different than my art. So.
All right. Where can we find you? I'm on Twitter at Podcast Sean. And of course, you can find the archive blog with over 2,000 reviews that I've written over the past 20 plus years. Sean at the movies.blogspot.com. Wrote a couple short stories this week, which was fun. I like writing short stories.
Me too.
It's rare when I get a chance to do it, but when I do it, you know, I hope it's good.
So I'm just going to put this out there, because if I don't say it, I'll never finish it. But I started in my head today writing a short horror story based on a very popular Taylor Swift song.
No.
I'm using songs as jumping off points as writing prompts. So
very cool. Very cool. I entered a contest for a, I guess they wanted the story to be about a talking forest. And so I wrote a fantasy horror film about a forest that can defend itself.
Nice. Was it called The Happening Too? Ma'am.
We'll talk more about Mark Wahlberg in a little bit.
But first, oh, I'm sorry. Yay.
But first, not a terrible Academy Awards.
No.
It could have been a lot worse.
I agree.
I think the worst part of it for me was Jimmy Kimmel. I like Jimmy Kimmel. Politically speaking, on point, a good person, genuine person. But I'm so sick of the way that people host award shows. And he just hosted this in the most traditional way, the most expected way. Like, I was mocking him. I was hanging out with Amy from the 94 podcast watching it, and we were mocking him, just going, blah 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 is here, and then a joke, blah 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 is here, and a joke. And it's like, that is just, oh god, it's so cringe.
So here's the thing though, would you rather it was him doing that, or it was Anne Hathaway and James Franco doing whatever the hell they were doing?
But even then, I mean, the writing for them was terrible too. I mean, they writing did them no favors. No, but one thing you saw though during this show was a guy who should have been hosting, even despite anybody's opinion of him right now, John Mulaney, who had came out there and with a completely different energy than anybody else, doing comedy differently than anybody else. I think he would have absolutely killed this and not done this type of, you know, traditional hosting bit.
I agree. I think that the Academy likes that traditional kind of milquetoast, middle of the road stuff that Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel. See? I mean, didn't mean to do that actually.
But it's appropriate though. It would have been exactly the same if Fallon had done it.
Yeah, oh God, don't even put that out in the atmosphere. Don't want that in the ether. For me, it's all about the presenters and the winners. Mm-hmm. I don't really care who the host is. I don't care that Jimmy Fallon or God, I did it again. They're all the same. I don't care that that time I did it on purpose. take it or leave it for me. They're all going to do the same thing. They've been doing it since I can remember when Johnny Carson used to host it every year.
I don't think so. Cause this week on the 94 podcast, instead of doing a movie, we did the 1994 Academy Awards and Whoopi Goldberg did not do this. She did her own thing. She did it with her own energy, her own way, and she absolutely nailed it.
Maybe there are different ways.
There are different ways to do it, and I think just Jimmy Kimmel did it in the most boring traditional way, because you know, in 1994, Whoopi Goldberg didn't have to go on Twitter the next day and hear about how horrible she was.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, not to say that, and I have to clarify that it's not about him being afraid of, you know, jokes about being woke or any of that stuff, or saying something that could get him canceled. That's not what it's about. It's about I think there was a fear among everybody who was there that they could end up, you know, being Twitter's main character the next day. And yeah, nobody wants that.
Like Elliot Glazer.
Nobody wants that. And it ends up happening. So you end up getting these kind of milquetoast, safe, boring award show hosts because they don't want to be, you know, they know they're going to get hammered no matter what they do. They just want to limit how much they're going to get hammered and for what.
Yeah. Well, I'm also old enough to remember when David Letterman did it and it was all anybody talked about for 6 months. It was the Uma Oprah thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's there's a fine line and I don't quite know if we could ever go back to something like Whoopi Goldberg.
I think John Mulaney could do it. I really, based off of like, he walked out there and did a presentation as a presenter and absolutely killed. Yeah. And I think that kind of energy is exactly what they could use.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
So let's talk about winners. I think we're all kind of surprised to see Emma Stone win. Nothing against Poor Things is great. Performance is great. It just seemed like all the momentum was with Lily Gladstone.
Yeah, I love Emma Stone. I love Poor Things. I love her in it. I was very disappointed that Lily Gladstone didn't win. I think everybody, including Lily Gladstone, thought she was going to win. It was a singular performance. The movie was about and carried by her. If I think Emma Stone was the safe kind of quote unquote industry choice this
which
time,
is weird thing considering the movie.
Well, yeah, but Emma Stone, she plays the game. Mm-hmm. She never calls anybody out really. She plays the game. She plays it well. And Lily Gladstone is, you know, relatively new to the people who are voting and they don't really know who she is. you know, even watching Reservation Dogs and stuff like that, I think people just see Emma Stone and they're like, oh, she's one. She's the new Meryl Streep. I've heard that. And I'm like, no, she's not. She's really not.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think what you can see, though, and again, not to take anything away from Emma Stone, but she is also doing the most acting versus the best acting.
Yes.
Her work is on paper. You know, it's like you can see that. It's like when you show your work in math, that's Emma Stone. You can see the work on the page, whereas Lily Gladstone is being much more naturalistic. And yeah. And you're not so much seeing the work as it's melting into the rest of that story.
Well, and the Academy loves it when you show your work.
Absolutely, they do.
Charlize Theron, I love her. Love her. And I love that movie and that performance, but it was the most of the year. Most. Mm-hmm. You know, Heath Ledger, the most.
Absolutely.
Amazing and wonderful. And I loved it, but the most. Crash, you know, everybody there was doing the most.
You also see it like in the production design categories. You see it in the costume categories. You'll see it there a lot, where you know, whatever looks like the most work gets the award.
Yeah.
Like you said about the 94, they gave best makeup to Mrs. Doubtfire, which is a garbage film with garbage makeup, and it went with that because it looked like the most makeup was done on it, as opposed to something like Schindler's List, which did a lot of makeup and did a lot of hair and did a lot of costumes. But you couldn't tell because it was, you know, it was not outlandish. It was just recreating something terrifying and
can
horrifying.
Can you imagine if Liam Neeson had put on the Leonard Bernstein notes? Oh my God, it's the best.
A better chance of winning, probably. But you know, it's just it's on my nerve every year when it comes to the Academy Award is seeing that they're going to pick somebody who did the most work, as if they feel then either they're lazy and they're looking for something that looks like acting, or they're just trying to justify themselves by saying, well, you can see this is, look at all the acting going on.
Yeah. I truly believe that's why Bradley Cooper even got nominated this year.
Oh, definitely. No question. No question.
I was very, very happy that Davine Joy Brown got her award, and the speech she gave was great.
Lovely. Yeah.
I was very surprised, quite honestly, that Paul Giamatti didn't win.
Yeah, I was too. I definitely was. Although I thought Cillian Murphy had a good chance. I thought, as I said on the show last time, I thought that you know, the rising tide of Oppenheimer gave him something of an advantage.
Yeah, I agree with that. I there wasn't anybody that I was like pissed about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get pissed more at the nominations and who's left off of the nominations than I do the actual awards, because generally the people who are nominated deserve to be nominated. And I feel like there could be a few more, a few different choices sometimes. And that's mm-hmm. where I, you know, like Toni Collette, you know, I will go to my grave saying that she should have been nominated for Hereditary and that Mia Goth should have been nominated for Pearl. I will not, you know, you cannot change my mind.
No, I'm with you on that. Those are just such incredible performances.
And I was, when you said about the most acting, I mean that they had scenes in both of those movies where they did the most acting, but the rest of it was very natural, you know, and mm-hmm.
It's the proper use of the most acting. It's the proper, you know, when you employ it as a tool rather than the entire performance.
Yes, yes. You know, like,
and they again, really, I don't want to sound like I'm taking anything away from Emma Stone. I don't, because it's a great performance. The performance absolutely serves the character that she's playing. It's just the most obvious amount of acting going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Robert Downey Jr. winning was fantastic. He gave a great speech. Jimmy Kimmel's joke about him was, again, another stupid host moment that we didn't need. You know, say, oh, you've never been higher.
Yeah,
stupid, I know that, needless joke.
Yeah, I know that Robert Downey Jr. has a very good sense of humor about his past, mm-hmm. and, you know, his addiction problems and whatever. And he talks about it pretty openly. I just, like, why would you bring that up now?
Yeah, not, it was just not necessary. It was not necessary. And you've got to, if you're going to do that, you need to frame it better. Like, you know, he's really like how incredibly he's made this comeback and turned his life around and stuff, like, you know, like he did in his actual speech, you know, deprecating himself and thanking the lawyer who, you know, got him out of jail and whatnot. Like, that's how you do that joke. Not just making the joke about him having been, you know, a drug addict.
That's yeah.
Just another one of those cringe moments of hosting. But there was absolutely, I mean, you could have gone to bed in the final 25 minutes of the show after, you know, with Oppenheimer coming up, because, I mean, Christopher Nolan, great guy, didn't have remotely an interesting thing to say winning Best Director or Best Picture.
I'm going to say this, and I don't mean it as a, really an insult to him. I don't think he's the most interesting person. I think he's talented, but I think a lot of his talent is kind of rote in a way.
Mm.
You know, he's never going to not get do his best. Mm-hmm. You know, he's never going to like stumble. Even though you might not be a huge fan of it, of what he's doing, I don't think that he's ever actively going to falter when it comes to directing.
Yeah, I agree. He's incredibly technically accomplished, and he probably always will be.
Yeah.
That's that he could take on a big, you know, controversial topic and maybe, you know, like Interstellar and kind of divide people. Yeah, that's about as close, but you can't argue with how good how well made Interstellar is.
No. Yeah. That's his shtick is well done. Kind of boring stuff sometimes. And well, no, you know what? Here it is. Well done academic stuff. Mm. Cause he's a very academic filmmaker to me. And I think I said that about Oppenheimer when it came out, was that it felt like a very standard biopic with moments of greatness in it.
I can see that. I like it a lot more than you do, I think.
Yeah. So, let's talk about Al Pacino. What the? Stop. Faye Dunaway sent him a dozen roses. I guarantee it.
Gotta stop sending these old people out there to do this. It's so humiliating. Why do they keep doing this? I mean, truly, it was not neat that. There are so many other people you could have chosen. You could have had Spielberg go out there and give away Best Picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody who is actually not going to embarrass himself. Like,
yeah.
I mean, truly, it was horrible. And then, you know, you had Warren Beatty a couple of years ago. I mean, why are they continuing to? I know they're Hollywood legends and all, but stop doing this to them.
Well,
it's obvious to everyone that Pacino was not all there.
Yeah, I kept thinking he was drunk.
It really seemed that way.
Like he'd been, you know, like trying to take his nerves down or something and just, you know, had a few drinks and all of a sudden it was like, okay, that was too many.
People tried to say that they didn't do a rehearsal, and they just kind of wheeled him out there at the last minute without any rehearsal and didn't. He did exactly what they told him to do, and no. That's not what happened. No. It's very clear that's not what happened.
Even my sister, who doesn't care about this kind of stuff, but we still watch all the shows together, the award shows, she goes, is he drunk? And I was like, he might be. It seems like it.
Whatever happened, it made him look addled. It made him look not unwell. And really, they just did him a horrific disservice. Again, get somebody who is under the age of 80 to do this next year, please.
Yes.
God, I mean, the only thing worse would have been sending Robert De Niro up there. He would. What the fuck am I fucking doing here?
Yeah, Jesus. Right.
He was, you know, so mad.
Everybody, we are in unprecedented times, and I want to tell you a story about. And I'm like, oh God.
It was just horrific, just a horrific embarrassment at the end there, and not in a fun way. It was all of us just going, just we feel bad for Grandpa.
And that being said, though, somebody got mad that they didn't, like, somebody who was in one of the movies, or got mad that they didn't announce every movie before he said who the winner was. I was like, no, who cares? Just say,
please. Well, they did announce them. They announced them all night.
Yes. Yes. That's what I meant. But I'm like,
ceremonially speaking, it does make sense to do a brief recap, and, you know, it does. Cause it's just part of the sort of the pattern of how they do things. That's part of why he was so confused. I think it was, that there weren't a rundown of who the nominees were beforehand. He just opened up the envelope and stumbled over it. I think if they had gone with a more traditional presentation, it might not seem as unnatural.
Yeah. Also, Diane Warren was mad that she didn't get her name said right before they announced her favorite song.
Boo fucking who? Jesus Christ, what a...
You've been nominated a million times. Shut the fuck up.
You're also wearing flaming Cheetos gear. Please, let's keep you off camera as much as possible.
Yes, yes.
The fucking flaming Cheetos song got nominated. I mean, what an embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
On the bright side, at least we had Ryan Gosling, who's just stole the entire night, whether it was him and what's her name? Emily Blunt, doing their bit when they were giving out an award, and then him coming out and doing "I'm Just Ken." He killed the entire night.
He absolutely did. And the fact that they surprised everybody by having all the Kens from the movie there, I was like, oh,
I was so happy. I was like, oh, there's Doctor Who. Doctor Who is on stage. Srinigatwa was one of the Kens. It was great. I was so happy to see those guys there, and going into the crowd and seeing just how excited Margot and Greta were. It was wonderful.
My niece loves Barbie. She watches it like probably once a week at least. And she was like, we had to like pause it. We were watching it on YouTube TV. We had to pause it because she had to go to the bathroom before they'd like, ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Gosling, and she's like, no, you got to pause it. I got to pee. I was like, oh, come on, pee after. But then it was long, and I was like, okay. Not a bad long, like some of the stuff, but just long.
And then they still managed to pick the right best song by going with Billie Eilish. That was the correct best song. As much as Gosling's performance was incredible, the right call was made on the winner.
Yeah. Oh, and I've heard people so mad that she's got two Academy Awards, and I'm like, why? She did two great songs.
Why would that be something people are mad about?
Oh, because it was somebody, I was reading some thread. I didn't know that Diane Warren was even nominated. I don't care, quite honestly. And the fact that she was going off, and then somebody's like, well, why does Billie Eilish have two? And, you know, but I'm like, because she had two of the best songs of the year.
And her song wasn't about flaming Cheetos.
Yes, this is true.
I mean, the fact that she's not completely embarrassed by having written a song about flaming Cheetos. you know, that's what she should be upset about, is that she got nominated for the flaming Cheetos song.
Yeah.
Absolute trash. Absolute trash. All right. Yeah, but we liked the Academy Awards, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's get on to things we don't like Imaginary.
Yeah.
What a movie, huh?
It was okay. It was not as bad as Night Swim.
Well, there's that. Imaginary, directed by Jeff Wadlow and starring DeWanda Wise and Tom Payne. Tom Payne, very nice guy. I had a chance to interview him about the movie. Thankfully, I'd not seen the movie yet when I talked to him. I would have had to cancel the interview because this is such a terrible film. I was so annoyed throughout this movie. Not to the point of like what you were during Night Swimming, but this wasn't good, Jeff.
No, it wasn't. It had good parts.
It's basically, what is this, like the horror film version of Drop Dead Fred?
Yeah.
And Drop Dead Fred's already a bit of a horror film itself. But nevertheless, Teddy Bear kind of embodies her childhood imaginary friend, but it turns out the imaginary friend is just a kind of a monster that takes her to another realm, and the little kid and all. I did not enjoy this particular silliness, Jeff.
I didn't. So there were parts of it that I liked. Like I said, I did like the relationship between her and the family. I kind of thought that was done a little better than it has in past, a little less hackneyed. I really thought watching the first probably 20 minutes of it, I really expected, you know, the older daughter to be the one to kind of go after her. And then that was kind of turned on its head a little bit for me. Betty Buckley, though. Betty, come on. You're better than this.
Honey, where are you?
She's
apparently a big horror fan. She loves The Walking Dead. She actually wanted to do this so she could meet Tom Payne.
Betty Buckley is a very surprising person. Like, you'd expect this, you know, very erudite woman to not be into all this stuff, but she does. She loves it. Mm-hmm. I just wish she'd picked a better one.
Yeah. No kidding.
Not that I would replace Margot Martindale, in Hereditary. Margot Martindale. Oh God, what's her name now? But I think Betty Buckley could have been the mother in Hereditary.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I think she could have done something like that, and I would have been more on her side. But this was just, her part was so terribly written and underwritten, completely underwritten. Not that
how did it take three writers to do this?
Yeah. Again, not as terrible as Night Swim, but not great.
Not great. Jeff Wadlow is not a terrible director, but he's not a very good director. He's definitely above average carpenter, maybe. He's not a spectacular film director. Cry Wolf. It's in his past, like that Kick Ass 2 nonstop. I mean, Truth or Dare is pretty bad.
True.
Fantasy Island is an abysmal film that everybody should be embarrassed about.
Yeah, worse than this. when you said you were sick last week, like, I went on Tuesday morning to watch Imaginary.
Yeah.
And when you said you were sick and we were going to skip, I was like, if I had to watch this fucking movie for nothing. So yeah,
I'm glad we're talking about it now. No, because I'd seen it and I'd there's got to be a reason why I sat through this.
You know, I genuinely like everybody who was in it, but I think with a better script and a better director, and not even that different better script, like a little better, and passable. So,
yeah, I just think that basically is this Blumhouse? I'm not sure if this is Blumhouse or not.
Everything's Blumhouse now. Yes,
the producers of this one, they were basically like, we've got a premise, let's just roll with it.
Yeah, exactly the same thing they did with Night Swim. Here's this short. Let's stretch it out until it's interminably long.
DeWanda Wise deserves better. She is she was the best part of the the last Jurassic Park movie. She played the pilot in that film and stood out among a group of terrible performances in the Jurassic Park movie. But she's just kind of left adrift here.
Yeah, the fact that she's an executive producer too on this, I was a little surprised because she is the heart of the movie, but she still comes across as she's trying to make something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a very distinct quality of her trying to make something happen as opposed to the movie itself, actually having something happen.
Yeah. I appreciated a few things about it. I thought that the labyrinth at the end reminded me of a cross between like Hellbound, Hellraiser 2, and Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, like some of the visuals from that. I thought that was kind of cool. They did like directly, I think, use the that M.C. Escher drawing as an inspiration. So I thought that was kind of cool. But
yeah. But that whole world that they create at the end is just, it should be far better realized than it is.
Oh, the budget, it was like, it looked like a haunted house that you would go to during Halloween season that, was put on by first timers.
the Spirit Halloween version of Freddy's Nightmare.
Yeah. So bad it's actually just the Davenport Spirit Halloween. Which is pretty bad. I used to work there. I think if it had just been tweaked, the script had been one more go through and the director had to drop out for something and somebody else got it. Perfection.
Yeah. All right. Imaginary. It's a hit. They're probably going to make another one or something. It made double its budget back, so there's that. The power of the horror genre strikes again.
Is horror back? They always say that whenever there's a hit.
It's the only genre that's doing anything right now in terms of money. I mean, considering that the movie that I thought would be, a huge hit that I decided to see on opening day was not a hit at all. In fact, a pretty significant bomb for Arthur the King, which you didn't see, but I did. Directed by Simon Kellen-Jones, who's actually a pretty good director. I've interviewed him about previous films that he's done. He made a terrific World War II thriller with Eddie Izzard and Judi Dench a couple years ago. That's a really good flick that people should check out. But this is it's based off a true story about an adventure racer played by Mark Wahlberg, who is down on his luck. He's going in for one last race, desperate to prove himself. And his most recent race experience was defined by him getting his team lost and stuck in the mud and finishing last. And he wants one more crack at it. So he's taking a team to the Dominican Republic for one last race that he hopes he can win to go out on top. In the process, they run across this dog that is from the Dominican Republic and is basically just homeless and doesn't have an owner and doesn't have much food and becomes their spiritual guide, leading them across this landscape. Adventure racing is all about climbing and biking and running and over hardcore terrain. And who cares? Honestly, there's nothing here that really gets you that excited. There's a couple of well-executed scenes. I like Simu Liu. I don't know why he's playing second fiddle to Mark Wahlberg in a movie. You were the lead in a Marvel film. What are you doing with your life?
Does he do a full frontal nude scene?
He does not.
I'll never see it.
not for this movie. This is not really the movie for that. You know exactly what's happening here. You know exactly what's going to happen. There are no surprises here. And They're not intended to be. There's never going to be. You have to, if you're going to do that, you have to come up with something that's going to set it apart, something that's going to make it feel special. And they just don't. They just rotely color within the lines and get us to the very predictable ending very easily. I mean, when the dog looks like he's about to die, you're going to get emotional because it's a good-looking dog. He's a really handsome, charismatic dog. And I did get emotional over his fate. But, you know, that's because I'm a human being who likes dogs. Not because the movie was compelling me. I didn't want to see this lovely dog suffer.
Okay.
So beyond that, there's just nothing to this. And I did think that this would prove to be something thought it would prove to be popular because it is such a mainstream, you know, we're talking about Mark Wahlberg and a cute dog. That's usually this, you know, it's like the joke from Shakespeare in Love. it'll be a hit. All you need is a bit with a dog. It'll be a hit. So I assumed this would be a hit, and I'm really surprised it wasn't.
Do you think that this whole like push that Mark Wahlberg, who is pretty well known for being a not great person in his past, do you think that like the constant push that they're doing with the social media ads about this whatever Jesus thing he's doing, do you think that people are just like, nah?
He's doing a Jesus thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like I could not scroll through Twitter the other day without having to hide and report this ad with him and this other dude about, you know, like Bible study with Mark Wahlberg or some shit like that. It's, yeah.
No, I was not aware of that.
I try not to support the guy just because he's pretty not a great person from, I don't know if he's gotten better or whatever, and people, you know, how people love to reform bad boys or whatever in their headcanon, but Donnie is the superior Wahlberg. I'm just gonna say it.
Have you met his wife?
No. Oh god, I forgot. Oh Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Okay, whoever the third one is who runs Wahlburgers is the superior Wahlberg. And Wahlburgers is not that great, so I guess
it's terrible. It's super expensive and not very good. Yeah.
Oh Lord.
Kind of like this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know how expensive this was. I imagine it cost a good deal, but who knows? It's not going to make its money back, so you know, Lionsgate's got that to deal with.
So they don't have to resurrect the dog in the pet cemetery.
The dog lives, in case anybody wants to know. It's based on a true story, so I don't count that as a spoiler.
Okay, well, when you said his fate, I was like, oh, the dog dies. Okay, whatever.
No.
It's of embarrassment from being in this movie?
That he might die, but it's a true story. Oh, okay. So. Yeah, the dog's
I thought
fine.
You were going to say the dog died of embarrassment from being in this movie.
Maybe. Maybe the actor dog did. I don't know. He might not. He might be dead. Who knows? The real life dog is living and for now.
Okay. Well. Okay. That's all. All we need to say about the poor dog.
Yeah. So the title of this movie, I've got to just touch on this, and I know it's really weird and pedantic, but like how they arrived at the title and the name of the dog baffles me. They're at this point where they've come to a kind of a stop. One of their guys is kind of getting a little bit sick and they're worried about him. So they stop and they take a break and they're having some food. And like Mark Wahlberg looks at the dog and like he's handing out food and the dog's not begging. And he's like, look at him. He's like a king just waiting for everybody else to eat. And like, when is that? Was that ever a trait that a king had? What?
Yeah. Henry VIII would like a word.
Call him Arthur because, you know, the king, because he's a king, like a king who's benevolent, yeah, like Arthur. Yeah, okay, sure.
Well, then why not name him King Arthur and call the movie King Arthur?
He's Arthur the King. I don't know. It's a really weird scene. I don't understand how they arrived at that as a trait that a king has, and it just kind of bugged me. It shouldn't bug me, but it did.
I don't know. Everything about this bugs me except for Simu Liu.
All right. Let's get on to the main reason why we're here. The new movie Love Lies Bleeding, directed by Rose Glass and starring Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien. This is a fascinating, weird thriller about... What is this about, Jeff?
God. I mean... This whole show is just going to the lesbians.
They are having a cultural moment with Driveway Dolls, and the lesbians are having a cultural moment, and I'm here for it.
I don't know what this is technically about. is it a love story? Yes. Is it a thriller? Yes.
Yes.
Is it kind of a modern day Bound, which we'll talk about in a little while? Kind of. I kept seeing similarities. is it a fantasy? Is it? Yes, but.
Is it a Jacob's Ladder scenario? Maybe.
This movie was fucking bonkers.
And it's wild.
It was a lot too. There was a lot going on, and I had to go directly to my job after seeing this movie yesterday. So I had no time to process it. I was processing just a little bit at a time while I was doing my work. And I was just like, oh my God, I think I need to see it again to process the whole thing. And everything happened in this movie. That's true. It's not like, and the thing is, this was one of those movies where a couple times everybody was doing the most acting, but at the perfect times. Mm-hmm. The most acting happened from whatever Ed Harris's hair was, the skullet mullet kind of thing. That was
a lot.
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart works at a gym. Katie O'Brien is a character who's on her way to compete in a bodybuilding competition in Las Vegas. She stops in this town and is going to stay there and get some work spend a little time there getting ready to go to Las Vegas. And she ends up at the same gym where Kristen Stewart works, and they spark immediately. Kristen Stewart's character introduces her to anabolic steroids, which definitely goes bad later. Steroids, never a good idea. It happens that she's taken a job working with both her brother, Kristen Stewart's brother-in-law, and Kristen Stewart's dad, Dave Franco and Ed Harris, who own a gun range and a bar, because of course they do.
The gun range has a bar. It's not two separate things. Yes, what could go wrong?
Let's get drunk and fire guns. I mean, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? America.
Yeah. And that was even, and this takes place in 1988. Think of how much worse it is now.
Ed Harris is a criminal. We don't quite know. I mean, you assume that he's probably a gun runner, maybe probably into drugs, but he's probably just in every kind of crime. He's murdered a lot of people, and his daughter, Lou, played by Kristen Stewart, may have also murdered people in the past. We'll find that out as the movie goes on. But Katie O'Brien's character, she's definitely going to do some harm in this movie, and in ways that you just don't expect. The love story is very compelling. They have an incredible romantic chemistry, these two.
Yeah, they do. Everybody in this movie has chemistry, good or bad. You know, it's like, like Jenna Malone and Kristen Stewart, I've always thought should be sisters because they're so much alike. They're like two sides of the same coin as actors.
Mm-hmm.
And to see them playing sisters, I was like, that's perfect casting. Although it took me a minute to recognize Jenna Malone. with her blonde Betty Broderick 1980s.
Mm-hmm. And look, just not being anything like Jenna Malone.
Right, right.
None of the characteristics of Jenna Malone.
Until the end. Mm. Until she gets her like acting moment. You know, but Katie O'Brien, she's just literally and figuratively fills up the screen.
She does. She really does. I'm not sure if I've ever seen her before in anything. And she just burst to life here in
literally
fashion. Just this big smile and just this huge physique then there's this magical realism element that comes into it late in the film that really kind of threw me for a loop. And I thought, you know what? I love it when movies take big swings, whether they fail or they succeed. I always appreciate a movie that takes a big swing, and this movie takes a very big swing, and I really appreciated that they did. It's a bit of magic that you just don't expect from a movie that's been this brutal and this, you know, frankly sexual throughout. Mm-hmm.
I just looked it up because I was like, I know Katie O'Brien from somewhere. I know you don't watch it, but she was in The Mandalorian.
Okay.
She had a fairly decent part as one of Moff Gideon's officers.
I don't know what a Moff Gideon is, but okay.
Some people out there will know.
Well, that's cool. I like Star Wars.
Yeah, not as much as I do, obviously. But, it looks like she's been in, you know, enough.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff I've seen that I guess I've seen her in, that she was in The Walking Dead. That's why Betty Buckley probably wants to work with her. She was on Westworld and Black Lightning and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and
there's a lot of TV, which is why I've never seen her before.
Yeah, you don't watch TV.
I really don't.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, she was in that.
Oh. Don't remember her in that. But then I don't remember much of Quantumania. Least of the Marvel films recently. She's fantastic in this. And you know, those sex scenes, I mean, they're very hot, you know, and they're very sweaty and they're very, you know, direct. They're not hiding anything. And I gotta say, I'm just very impressed by the frank sexuality of it, just putting that forward, and it really is impressive.
Yeah, it was. I'm obviously not one to care about girl on girl action, but it was pretty intense.
It is a weird experience to experience that in a room full of a large room full of people.
Yeah.
Quite something.
Fun story. So it was pretty packed yesterday morning. And first of all, I had to tell the guy who was sitting in front of me to put his phone down. And I scared the shit out of him. But it was awesome. He was just like reading IMDb or something, and he had his phone like way up, and I'm like, dude, is that descriptive text? Is that what, you know? So I kind of crept down by him as the music was going through. I'm like, hey. He jumped like crazy. It was awesome. I was like, could you put your phone down so where I can't see it if you're going to be on it throughout the whole movie? Oh, you scared the shit out of me. I'm like, good. Put your phone down. But there were these two people behind me, and I could ever like the Dave Franco coffee table scene.
Ooh.
They were screaming. They were like, I mean, they were really so into the movie that it made it even better. You know how when you're in a movie theater, like you're going to watch a movie at home and you're like, okay, this was good. But it's heightened when you're at the theater, especially with a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And that really, like, I can handle the stuff that happened in the movie. And that scene especially, I was a little like, oh, but they were screaming. They're like, oh, my God. and it just heightened everything for me. So
yeah, I do. I love that scene. It felt like a scene out of like Hereditary or Beau Was Afraid. Mm-hmm. Like it took on that level of that level of good. I'm not the biggest fan of Saint Maud, Rose Glass's other well-known film, but this one really impressed me.
Yeah, I did like Saint Maud. I thought it was just so weird and off-putting that I had to like it. But yeah, this was just this. I think I loved it. I know I liked it, but I think I kind of loved it. And I used to be the biggest Kristen Stewart hater because of the Twilight movies and that stupid fucking baby in part three or four or whatever. How many there were. Renesmee, my friend and I literally send that baby back and forth to each other on Instagram DMs because it's so off-putting. And they've run it through the smiling filter. It's just, yeah, it's great.
Are you imprinting on it? Is that what's happening?
Yes, I'm imprinting on it. Oh my God, that was so fucking stupid. I watched the first movie with our sisters. And they were so into it.
I was just like,
what in the actual fuck, you guys?
Yeah. Stewart has gotten so good. I mean,
you know what? Lesbianism agrees with her. Because since she's come out, she's made some of the best stuff out there.
I mean, her performance as Princess Diana was exceptional. Even the underwater action movie that she made was really good. It was a really good, you know, version of that kind of movie. She's making smart choices. I've always been a fan, though. I mean, even after Twilight, I didn't hate her. I think in between there, she did movies like Adventureland and she did The Runaways, and she was, I mean, an incredible Joan Jett.
I remember talking. I was on the show about The Runaways because I remember like really liking that.
Yeah, so I'm really a big. I think there's a future Academy Award in her.
Oh, I honestly thought she was going to be nominated for Princess Di.
Yeah, I mean she deserved it, but didn't happen.
Maybe she can come back and play the ghost of Princess Diana in the Kate Middleton movie.
You mean where's Kate?
Yeah.
Where in the world is Kate Middleton?
I didn't care about that shit until my friend did a podcast episode about it. And I was listening to it. And I'm like, oh, now I'm invested. And then they released that video of probably not her. So,
which one? The one in the car or the one at the farmer's market?
The one at the farmer's market.
Totally not her. Where's the British media? They're better than this. They're supposed to be better than this. How is TMZ scooping the British media? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, they have since walked that story back.
Well, why were there Christmas decorations at the farmer's market?
Thank you.
There's this very, very funny woman on TikTok who I'm absolutely adoring, and she's doing the best coverage of this. And she just said, produce that white lady. She's demanding produce that white lady. And like, yeah, show her. And they still have it. It's weird. It's just weird.
It's weird. And they got it. Like, there's got to be a movie coming out pretty soon about it, because how can you not? If you can turn around and make like the movie about the Willy Wonka experience in Scotland within a day of that going viral, you can do Where's Kate?
Mm-hmm. The Royal Cinematic Horror Universe coming soon.
The princess is missing.
All right, let's talk about Bound. 1996, directed by the Wachowskis and starring Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly. This is a story about two women falling in love and defying the mob and stealing the mob's money. Joe Pantoliano doing the most acting, as he always does, as the main evil protagonist of the film. I'll be honest, I don't love this movie, Jeff.
Really? This is the first time I've seen it. I'm glad I suggested it because we had something else in the works and we're holding off on that. But I'm so glad. I'd never seen it. I know Lily Wachowski by, passing. And had I known her after I saw this, if I saw this movie before I met her, I would have been that person. I would have been like, oh my God, let's talk about Bond, instead of the Matrix and whatever. I was super, super invested in this movie. Because it's small.
It is small. I didn't really buy into the chemistry between Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly. They're sexy together. They're sexy, and I do appreciate that in 1996, it was bold to have that kind of lovemaking.
They were not lovemaking; they were fucking.
It was bold and transgressive in 1996 to have this kind of thing in a mainstream film, and I do appreciate that. I just didn't buy their chemistry beyond that, and Gina Gershon especially just sort of disappears for a while we're dealing with the whole series of dead bodies that Joe Pantoliano turns out for a good portion of the end of the second and into the third act, and I was kind of like, where is she? When are we going to get her back in the story? And then when she is back in the story, she's basically tied up the entire time.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think she wasn't like in the story. And I really, so I have this thing, like if you watch Scooby-Doo, and I think I've said this on the show before, if you watch Scooby-Doo and they explain how they're going to catch the person, it never works out. But if they don't, if they say, okay, gang, here's the plan, and then they cut to commercial, that's when the plan works out.
Okay.
Okay. And what, like, I dare you to watch 5 Scooby-Doo episodes and watch for that. Because every time. A lot of cartoons, too, I think. However, in this one where she's explaining the plan, and you see it working the whole time. And I thought that was great. I just love that. The plan is working and we might hit a couple snags, but it's still the plan and they're going to make it work. Mm-hmm. I loved all the supporting characters. Chris Maloney was eating all the scenery with relish.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that. I thought they had enough chemistry, honestly. Gina Gershon, she's just kind of looking for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of her character to me was, she's out of prison and she wants something to happen, but she doesn't want to go back. So she's kind of letting stuff happen, if it will.
I was kind of compelled by that early on, but once it becomes the Joe Pantoliano show, I was out. Like I didn't enjoy his performance. I don't enjoy him as a bad guy. I didn't care whatever he did. And I think there's a keystone there that is missing, and it's his performance.
Fair enough. Yeah, he's the weakest link in this movie, but
undoubtedly.
I just the little, the noir touches, the music and everything, it's for me it all worked together. And I like some of the older like 40s noir movies, and his performance is a little larger than life but not outsized for me for what the movie is. A lot of times if I'm watching a movie at home, I get distracted by my phone or drawing or whatever, and I was actually behind on what I was working on for Days of the Dead because I kept watching the movie, like actively watching the movie. So I'm glad we picked it.
I think this, was proof of concept of why the Wachowskis are incredible artists. It's a remarkable, in terms of a debut feature, it really has all really strong directorial intentions. Yeah. I just think the linchpin of this is just such a a weak performance from Joe Pantoliano, and I just don't know what they were trying to do with the, with Gina Gershon's character. I think there was should have been more there, and there isn't. And I think there's too much time where she's not involved, where I wanted her to be involved, because I think she's so much more of an interesting actor than anybody else in the movie.
I love Jennifer Tilly, though. I think she's great. And this was her, this is her being reserved. So no Tiffany and Chucky in this one, in this performance.
In that early, there's an early scene where she's starting to flirt with Gina Gershon, where she invites her over to get the earring out of the pipe. I thought that was a solid scene. That was well done, and I thought the vibe was really strong there.
And well, that was the seduction scene, you know, the kind of what everything kind of hinged on.
Mm-hmm. And so. I thought that was strong. But once again, though, when we get to the part where they start killing people, it wasn't interesting to me. Mm. Wasn't holding my interest at that point.
I mean, for me, it was interesting because they weren't supposed to kill anybody. Nobody was supposed to die except maybe Joey Pants off screen after the movie, after mm-hmm. they got away. So, I don't know. I'm sad that you didn't like it as much as I did.
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't, but I did not. I don't find it to be an all-time classic.
Well, I don't know if it's an all-time classic, but I think it did. It definitely informed parts of Love Lies Bleeding. See, you know, there was definitely some, you know, some of those oh shit kind of moments in that from the characters, you know, like the characters kind of oh shit when stuff happened that they didn't expect.
Maybe, but Ed Harris is so much of a better villain, though. Like, he looks like a snake. He's terrifying just with his eyes and that ridiculous hair.
I'm not disputing that at all.
He is a horror film kind of character, with that face and that hair, and that is a much stronger character to hinge your bad guy on.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, Joey Pants is always doing the most acting in anything he's in.
True that.
And I think, you know, like, I think the Wachowskis like him, so that's why they work together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that can cloud how a performance is given.
Yeah, I think so. I think I agree with that. All right. Coming up the next show, we've got some really cool movies coming out that I'm very excited to see. We're talking about, I'm excited for Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. And I know I understand that there are people who are not, but I am. Me. Late Night with the Devil looks incredible. And so does Immaculate. They both kind of got a good, strong vibe, both of those, that I'm really interested in seeing.
Yeah, I'm going to, since I'm, this weekend is going to be rough for me. I'm going to try to see Late Night with the Devil and Immaculate. I can't guarantee I'm going to see Ghostbusters because, well, I've never been a Ghostbusters fan. except for the women one. I actually did. That was kind of funny. But they're all fine. I just, they didn't get me when I was a kid. So the nostalgia factor for me, from the last one, I will say when Harold Ramis showed up as a ghost, I got a very little emotional. I got a little verklempt because I do like Harold Ramis. He was my favorite part of the original Ghostbusters. So, so seeing him, that was great. But I didn't, you know, it wasn't like it. It just, I guess it's not one of my touchstones. So
I'm looking forward to it. I really like Paul Rudd, so I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah.
All right. Quick round of flick chart. What do you say?
Sounds good to me.
Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore or Coneheads?
Oh, Coneheads, obviously. I mean, yeah, funny. Alice Doesn't Live Here.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs or Almost Heroes with Chris Farley.
Ooh, Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Chris Farley, but that wasn't...
No, that wasn't a very good movie. Star Trek The Motion Picture or The Mirror Has Two Faces?
So I have not seen The Mirror Has Two Faces, even though it is in my DVD player as we speak, because I listened to the Barbara... I listened to the Barbara Streisand book, which is amazing, and you should all get it, because it's like, hearing her read it is... Yeah. So I going back and I'm watching her movies, and I just happened to find that one for a buck at like a thrift store or something the other day. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch it. And then this weekend I just listened to a book while I was finishing up my prints. So I didn't watch it yet, but it's in my DVD player.
I'm picking it just because I really hate, I really hate Star Trek The Motion Picture a lot, a lot. All right. Ooh, here's a good one for you, Jeff. When a Stranger Calls, 1979, or Sex, Lies, and Videotape?
Because it has one of the scariest first 15 minutes of any movie ever, I'm going to pick When a Stranger Calls.
I'm picking Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And the coin says Sex, Lies, and Videotape. All right. The Hitman's Bodyguard or Licorice Pizza?
Licorice Pizza.
Definitely. Undoubtedly. Much better film. All right. Let's see what comes next here. It'll give us another one. It's like I'm using Bob's internet all of a sudden. oh, good God. Would you rather be angrily bored or just sleepy? Battlefield Earth or Legends of the Fall?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Skinnamarink versus the Outwaters. well, because I'm going to meet Craig Sheffer this weekend, and one of my friends wants me to ask him if he ever saw Brad Pitt naked during that movie, I'm going to pick that.
Yeah, it's at least a nap is preferable to being angrily bored, I would say. weird combination here. Stripes or Pauly Shore's In the Army Now?
Stripes.
Stripes is desperately overrated, but it's better than Pauly Shore. So that's,
yes,
that's
like, I don't even care about Stripes. I loved it when I was a kid because it was, you know, ooh, dirty.
Saturday Night Fever or The Report with Adam Driver?
The Report.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go with that. I think Saturday Night Fever is more of a cultural movie than it is a movie per se.
Yeah, and they didn't turn The Report into a Capital One commercial with Santa Claus doing the Tony Molinaro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, John Travolta canceled, in case you hadn't heard.
Oh, God, what did he do now? Come out of the closet?
No, apparently he sexually assaulted Amanda Bynes on the set of Hairspray. So, there you go.
But was she dressed in male drag? Because that doesn't make any sense.
Moonlight or Hoffa?
Moonlight.
Let's see. Happy Birthday, Bruce Willis. The Surrogates or The Way of the Dragon?
I don't think I've ever seen The Way of the Dragon.
So you're picking Surrogates?
Sure.
Paddington 2 or A Few Good Men? Obviously you're picking A Few Good Men. Never mind.
Can you see Paddington and A Few Good Men?
Yep, I'm telling all the truth.
And we're done. Thank you, Jeff.
Good night.